K-Mud Podcast presents.
So in case you didn't already know, you've got K-Mud Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarasota. And we're going to be talking with the former editor of the Emerald.
I think she still has the Emerald magazine. I think she does, yeah.
Christina Giovanni.
We'll find out more. Mm-hmm.
Giovanni's going to be on. And she moved to New York, right?
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about what's going on
and
there.
That's fun. New York I was for a period involved with a farm and a dispensary over there, but it was just for a short time, and it really sounded like the Wild West. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah. All right, we got our guest.
Okay, well let's get Christina in the studio.
Hi, how are you guys?
Hi, great to have you in the studio,
thanks
Christina.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. I love rekindling conversations with my loved ones in Humboldt County.
Yeah. We were just telling our listeners that you're in New York now, right?
That's right. I live in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Real New York.
definitely.
Well, Christina, I was about to say before we ask you about your Brooklyn experience, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've been up to when you were out here and then what got you to move to New York.
Sure, absolutely. So I came out to Humboldt County for college, actually. I had a great college experience. I loved Humboldt State University. I know it's now a Cal Poly. I majored in journalism. Originally, I actually went there to be a nursing student. But then once I started taking some science classes, I realized that was not the lane for me. So I switched to journalism. And I always wanted to be like Diane Sawyer. Sorry, I was going to say Diane Stewart. No, Diane Sawyer. I really wanted to be like a on-camera reporter. But by the end of my college experience, I got raided by the Humboldt County Drug Task Force. My ex was caught up on an Amtrak train, and it trickled into the home that we shared in Arcata. And so I was arrested. We had some cannabis in our house, some cash, and I think I had a grocery store bag full of trim just in a spare bedroom. And I'll never forget, I got harboring a room for drug manufacturing because of that. So,
oh, God.
You know, that experience kind of thrusted me into creating a platform for people like myself to share their stories and to be more than a mugshot. You know, it was really important for me that people didn't see me as, you know, this, degenerate, this criminal that, you know, I felt like I was made out to be in the newspapers. So I really wanted to create a platform that, you know, positively promoted cannabis. And because I was living in the Emerald Triangle, I decided to call it the Emerald Magazine. And so I graduated from college in May of 2012. And by the end of August or September, I launched our first print issue. It was, you know, when I look back on it now, I kind of cringe a little bit because I've learned so much since the beginning, graphic design wise, just, you know, how to write better, how to copy edit better. So, you know, I mean, we've been around since 2012 and we've grown a lot. And so in December of 2018, I moved out to Brooklyn. And I went to the MJ Biz Conference in Las Vegas. I met a banker there. His business partner had raised capital for High Times. And so he was familiar with the cannabis media landscape. They made me an offer to help me raise capital. So I moved out to New York. We raised some capital, just through family and friends, nothing big. And really turned it into a media corporation. So going from just a print magazine to a full media corporation, we do a newsletter 3 times a week. We still do print. We're bi-monthly. You guys might hear my dog in the background.
That's okay.
And we do digital articles on our website. We do videos. We're active on social media. So really just out there with the mission to promote cannabis. And, you know, I would love one day, I can't wait when we can bring in cannabis from outside New York State, because I would love to have some great products from the Emerald Triangle in the dispensaries that I have out here, which, you know, even back then, so many years ago, I thought about that. How can I really show the Emerald Triangle, the inner beauty of the cannabis industry, to the rest of the world? And so I tried to really create the Martha Stewart of marijuana, or the Betty Crocker of Cannabis Magazine, something that was unintimidating to readers, something that was approachable, feminine, a really clean-cut representation of what modern-day cannabis is, not just boobs, blunts, and bongs. I wanted something else. You know, I was working in the opposite direction of the mugshot. So, you know, what is a positive image? Who is in the cannabis industry? Who's a cultivator? Who's a retailer? I'm really just showing that to the rest of the world. So that was 2019. Then COVID hit, kind of scaled back a little bit, but then really came back in 2020, started publishing again. And that's when New York State opened up the application for retail dispensaries. So my arrest in California did not qualify me as a social equity applicant in New York, because you had to have been arrested in New York. So, you know, I met someone at a CWCB expo at the after party. There was this guy there, and he was just smoking a blunt. And I stood next to him just randomly, and he was like, "Do you want to hit this?" And I was like, "Yes, I do." So fast forward a couple days, I see him standing on my street corner, and I say, "Hey, you're the guy from the cannabis after party." And he's like, "Yeah, my name is Ray. I was born and raised here." And I said, "Well, I live in this building." So, you know, very coincidental. And, you know, I started buying my weed from him. So fast forward, you know, almost 5 years later, I was buying some weed off him, and I said, "Hey, you know, have you ever been arrested for cannabis?" And he was like, "Oh, yeah, all the time. Like, he's been arrested." You know, back in the day, though, in Bushwick, where we live in Brooklyn, I mean, you know, these neighborhoods were over-policed. So if you just walked outside, if you were smoking a joint, you know, a cop could come out of nowhere. And that's kind of what happened to him. He got arrested by surprise a few times just being on his stoop. So, you know, I pitched him the idea. I said, "You know, if you want to go into business with me, you know, I would be happy to, you know, file the application and get everything together." And he thought about it for a while, and then he came back to me and he said, "Yeah, let's do it." And it's funny because he was like, "What do you want to call it?" And I said, "Well, I have this brand. It's called the Emerald, so I really would like to call it the Emerald Dispensary." And he's like, "Oh, that sounds great. My granddaughter's name is Emerald." So we kind of knew it was, you know, meant to be, and that was 2 years ago. And
wow.
So now we have a dispensary in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We have one in the Upper East Side in Manhattan on 81st and Lexington. Wow. And then we're about to open our third one in Carroll Gardens, which is in downtown Brooklyn. Wow. And then we got approved for our fourth one, which was a pleasant surprise. I wasn't planning it so quickly because it's the rat race here with the real estate.
Wow.
You know, I've submitted probably maybe 7 or 8 properties to the state, half of which have been denied, the other half of which have been approved. So, you know, you kind of just have to put a couple sticks in the fire. Some might come through, some might not. And, you know, it was a blessing, but we got our third approved maybe 2 months ago, and then last month we got our fourth one approved. So we are just rocking and rolling now.
All right, well, that's pretty exciting.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was mentioning that I had a very small involvement in a farm and some dispensaries out there myself.
Mm-hmm.
It the vertical integration seemed like a good idea. Do you have a farm as well?
No, I'm not vertically integrated. I don't have a micro license. I just have a retail license.
Okay.
I used to grow when I lived in Humboldt, but to be honest, I don't have the best green thumb.
Oh.
So I was never really much of a mass cultivator. But and, you know, I never did retail before. So
oh,
I'm,
wow. How's that,
you know,
how's that been, the retail experience?
I mean, it's a learning experience for sure. You're dealing with the public directly. And, you know, in Brooklyn, we see anywhere from 250 to 300 purchases a day. So, you know, it's a lot of face time with individuals.
Yeah,
and so,
sure.
I mean, it's been good. We have a pretty robust staff between my two stores right now. There's probably about 30 employees. So, you know, that's part of working retail as well, is, you know, just making sure everyone's on the same page, that you've got a good vibe in the store because the customers feel that energy. So it's been good. I mean, listen, the tax man comes around to collect, so there's no fooling that. So, I mean, it's serious business. You know, it's a license to sell a controlled substance. It was really hard to get here. It took 2 years just to get through the licensing period. And then the build-out for our Brooklyn spot took, I don't know, 6 months, maybe a little less for Manhattan. So, you know, I mean, all of it, I've never done any of this before. You know, before, I don't know, maybe like January of last year, you know, never done retail, had really only done journalism, done the magazine, you know, done online digital advertising. That's really what my background is. But, you know, fast forward a year, almost a year and a half later, opening third and fourth stores, like, it's a lot of information to take in such a short amount of time. But, you know, I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I love building businesses. I love business development. It's a joy for me. It's very exciting. So I take in all of this, you know, with a smile on.
Whoa, yeah. I mean, have you been also just curating the menu too?
Yeah, you know, I kind of leave that to one of my employees at the Manhattan store, and then my business partner in Brooklyn. They're both very much into curating a very diverse menu offering. And that's, when we look at our Google reviews, that's a lot of the comments that people leave. It's like, we have so many SKUs. I unfortunately do not get to partake much in, you know, curating the inventory. I'm in the accounting department. I'm paying the bills and, you know, doing all that fun stuff in the background. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, I don't mind it, because I feel like, you know, I still dream of moving back to Humboldt County. That's where I want to be.
Aww.
After this journey.
Nice.
And so, but like, I tell myself, like, you are in your era, your phase of like hitting the pavement.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like, this is like where my mind is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, eventually, I mean, I'm not going to keep, you know, these businesses forever. At some point, you know, I'd like to exit. And, you know, at that point, I'd like to come home to California. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, good. We, of course, we miss you here, and we definitely welcome you back, girl.
So how?
Thank you.
How is the quality of what's being grown there in New York? Is it working for you?
So there is something going on. There's no tracking system right now. So the rumor is, and a lot of this weed looks really good. And up until this year, people had to grow straight outdoors. And that cannabis is very obvious.
Hmm.
It looks, you know, sometimes it could be, it smells like hay.
Hmm.
Maybe it wasn't cured properly. But then you've got these brands that have this amazing, dank, top-tier flower. And it's looking like California indoor,
oh,
or it's
wow.
looking like Humboldt County mm-hmm. outdoor, which looks just as good as indoor to me,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then you just, you know, like,
oh,
so there's
so
this.
That's yeah. getting into brands that are labeled as New York brands.
Everything has to be grown, sourced, and tested in New York State. So we would never accept anything that said otherwise.
Right.
But I don't know. Like,
yeah, something's going on. You don't. Yeah, totally. Well, that's
something's not kosher, you know. But it's so. But well, that being said, like the flour that's on the market is really good. I mean, it's surprisingly good because it's such a new industry, and the weather in New York is not.
I mean it.
Great.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Well, it does seem. I mean,
not Optimus Prime.
It does seem like farmers in New York competing with herb coming from California, that could be kind of difficult.
Yeah. I mean, listen, California has the reputation that it does because it is amazing. The weather is great. The conditions are good. And New York, like I said, I mean, I think this year they're allowing them, I'm not 100% on this, but I think this is the first year they're allowing them to have like mixed use light. I might be mistaken, but there's no like straight indoor, I believe, at this point.
Okay.
So you know, I mean, the industry is growing. You know, there's some great cultivators out here with a lot of soul and a lot of love. And listen, and there's some people from Humboldt County out here. I've connected with growers that I knew back when I lived in California that are now working with farms out here to share their, you know, their knowledge and their experience. And I think that's great. And but like I said, you know, I can't wait for the day where we can have interstate commerce and, you know, we can put some Emerald Triangle products in the Emerald dispensary. So.
Right. Well, yeah,
that would be really cool. And I think it would rock, too. New York is – that area has been a real responsive to Humboldt product, Humboldt pot. I think they'd eat it up. It looks like we have a caller.
Yeah, we did get a caller. Let's take him.
Let's get him in the studio.
Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Shane from Virginia.
Okay.
Hey, Shane.
Hey. So a couple of quick questions. I'm also a Cal Poly alumni, just like you are, and I grew up here in Virginia, and a couple friends of mine, that live in New York and live in Northern California, we're looking into the micro license into growing in the Hudson Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very familiar with that area and grew up there part of my life in the Hudson Valley. And I know that's where most of the cannabis is being grown right now. The farms, the brands that are coming out. There was a woman on the show, on the cannabis show, maybe a year or so ago, and she runs the New York Hudson Valley Farmers Association or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
So anyways, we were looking at getting the micro license for growing and selling it to dispensaries. Now, the people I would have brought on with me are even better than me. They're amazing. But we looked into it, and it seemed like a very arduous process. Not to mention that the supply looked like it was out of control, that they're sitting on enormous amounts of supply that the dispensaries weren't able to sell. Is the market kind of evened out now? Is it supply and demand about where it should be with buying some brands? Is it something we should look into?
Well, so I know exactly what you're talking about. In the beginning, they weren't approving enough dispensaries to open, but they had let the cultivators start growing like almost a year before. So everyone harvested, and then they had nowhere to sell it. Yeah. So that was an issue. I have to say, the Office of Cannabis Management has gone through some serious highs and lows over the last 2 to 3 years. They are terribly understaffed. The executive director, I believe, got terminated. You know, there's just been a lot. It's New York politics, you know, to say the least. And so, I myself was in a holding pattern in the beginning. I was being juggled between the licensing department and the compliance department, waiting for my state inspection. And they just there was no one there to do the inspection, so they just kept bouncing me from department to department for like 2 months. I had to get my lawyer involved to be like, hey, guys, they're ready to open, they're paying rent, and there's just no one there to come out and do a walkthrough. on the flip, the cultivators, you know, I mean, they were all waiting for the OCM to approve us, and it just never really came. So that is an issue of the past. That is not the case anymore.
Okay.
There's not a lot of dispensaries that have opened. I think as of Friday, there was 358 in the whole state. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, but the thing is, I think there's certainly room for someone to come in and launch a brand. I absolutely think there's room for that.
My
Brooklyn dispensary, I mean, it's kind of a beast. I mean, it you know, God bless, like it gobbles up flower left and right. So, you know, we're always looking for new brands, and we are of the philosophy that we'll give anyone a shot. You know, we want to see if your product sells. So we might do a small initial order, like 1,500. But, you know, if it sells, there's no reason why we wouldn't want you back.
Okay.
But it's just a kind of way for us to, like, give everyone a chance, try a little bit, see what
that's
the consumers
great.
Like. You know, and
yeah.
that's Brooklyn. You know, in Manhattan, what they really want up there is vapes and sleep time gummies. Flower
yeah.
isn't even, I think it's, like, fourth popular. The beverages are very popular. So, I mean, there's plenty of products, you know, that are, no one's doing suppositories, no one's doing transdermal patches. I'm not sure if you can do them in New York, but I would think you can, you know, so there's different areas for people to come in.
Yeah. So my quick last question, okay, so there is room, you're saying, for, let's say, me and some other growers, or someone, let's say, in Humboldt County that wanted to come in and get land. And we were looking at that up in the, you know, Hudson Valley area around, because land is very expensive anywhere near New York City. So
mm-hmm.
we were looking at that. I'm from Westchester, New York area as well. So we've looked at that area, and we're like, well, why don't we build a brand and start growing? I have my own brand here in Virginia. I make CBG flour until our
mm-hmm.
Virginia law changed. The Republicans here changed it because, unfortunately, a child had died. Bought some gas station Delta 8, and so
mm-hmm.
they changed all the laws. And then we still have recreational here, but I just personally grow CBG flower for oil. And my brand is Mineral Leaf Farm, and maybe do you sell CBG or CBD oil or anything like that?
We do. It needs to be made in New York, though. That's the only, even CBD, it all needs to come to New
yeah.
York State. And, you know, it might be easier for you to enter the market. You know, maybe, like, vertical integration, maybe having a micro license is too much. Maybe, you know, you just want to link up with a manufacturer, and then you can kind of white label. You know, I know the Buffalo
yeah.
area, there's a few groups up there. If you were looking to buy land, it's much more affordable, obviously, the farther
yeah.
north you go. Keep in mind
yeah.
you're dealing with the weather. You know, it can get bitter cold up there, like snowing. Versus,
sure.
I don't know what it's like in Hudson, but.
Yeah, same. Yeah. So you're thinking it might be easier for someone like me to get in that way through, let's say we grew it and then went through a, like you said, a manufacturer that white labeled it for us. And they're distributing. So basically going through a distributor.
Pretty much. I don't know. I mean, that might be easier for you. I mean, if you want to grow it yourself and you're committed to, like, getting the property, setting it up, then maybe you will be set up, you know, easier for a micro license. Unless if you just,
you
know, were in Virginia and you wanted to launch a New York brand, I would say, you know, go through a distributor.
Right. Okay. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
I don't
Love
think you're
absolutely.
Hey,
thank you.
Check out your magazine, and it's great talking to an alumni as well.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for your call, Shane. Shane's a regular caller. So a couple of things that you'd mentioned that I want to know more about. You said that California pot, legal pot, of course, and we all know this. It can't be in New York. We're not
right,
there yet.
Like brands, like even California brands are showing up on the shelf to such a point where aren't they kind of looking into that now? The state?
I mean, you can link up with a manufacturer over here and launch your brand. I think that's the way that they do it, is they, you know, go from state to state and they just set up shop with someone in particular, whoever gets their contract, you know, and that's kind of how you work that. I mean, listen, there are some brands that something just came out in the New York Times last week. I mean, there's an investigation on, I don't know, I think it was like a handful of brands like Stizzy's.
Glasshouse.
To the moon, like a bunch of these brands that were under investigation for one thing or another. But I mean, people are keeping their eyes out, you know, like they're watching. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we've heard anyway, is that there's a number of California brands that are just showing up there.
Mm-hmm. Kind of half under the table. What about just straight black market? Is there still a black market presence up there, like it used to be?
Yeah, it's still alive and well. And you know what, New York kind of reminds me of Los Angeles, you know, a few years ago, because they have these illegal stores, and they would get raided, and then they would close, and then they would open up the next day, you know, next door or right above. And they do that here. They have the bodegas that sell. They have the smoke shops. They're very hard to miss. You know, you can identify them real easy. But the police have been given, like, the authority to close them down, padlock them, and they do that. You know, they weren't doing that for the last 2 years.
Oh, wow.
But now they are doing that. And I mean, it is helpful for business. You know, we do see a difference in sales when, you know, prior to them shutting all them down. And then, you know, they shut down. Then there was a period where they all kind of reopened, but then they shut them back down. So, you know, the police are trying to combat it. It's still here. It's not as bad as it was. Like 2 years ago, everywhere. Like you wouldn't even know what was legal and what was not legal.
Right.
They all just kind of blended in. So
sure.
So how well are the licensed? How well are the licensed shops able to really serve New York City? Are there like communities where they're kind of dry areas or whatever? They don't have access.
I don't know. I think it really depends on the consumer and if they, you know, want, if they, you know, care enough to make sure that what they're putting in their bodies is clean and tested and regulated, then they're willing to travel for a dispensary. I would say at least the only area that's opted out of retail is Long Island. Mm-hmm. There's like one city in Long Island that I think is open to retail. That's Farmingdale. But everywhere else is closed off. So those people, you know, they have to travel for it. They're not on every corner here in the boroughs because they want you to be at least 1,000 feet away from your competitor. So everyone kind of has their fair distance. We do have a competitor. I mean, we have a competitor at least like half a mile away from us on each side. So, but you know, I mean, you have to make it your own. There are bars that are right next to each other, but people go to your bar because, you know, you have a great cocktail selection. The prices are really good. The staff is great. So, you know, you have to curate that vibe. And then fortunately, you know, we have the media company to amplify and advertise everything that we're doing at the dispensary. So, you know, we're in a good position on that level. So, I mean, it's growing. It's like, it's like my kid. It's my baby. So,
yeah,
like, we're growing.
Like, what about cannabis culture and events and things of that nature?
The cannabis culture is strong out here. There's events. I mean, it reminds me of California back when I lived there in like 2015, 16, 17, like all of the networking events that we did, they have that now. It's going on now in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve Geeter from North Coast Horticulture Supply is doing a cannabis cup out here. It's called Head Stash.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And the Emerald, the dispensary is a drop-off site for cultivators out here, and I'm a judge, and my business partner, Ray, is a judge.
Fine.
And, you know, I mean, he's really one of the first people to do it out here. You know, I mean, like I said, like, the market is open to receiving, like, innovation out here, and, you know, the cannabis cups, we really haven't had many of them. There might be a lot of seshes that happen underground, but, you know, as far as, like, some of the stuff that we've been doing in California, like, you know, like I said, like, all those years ago, starting to happen out here in New York. And so everyone is very excited. You can feel the momentum. You know, there's a lot of energy in the air. It's a happy place. New York City is a happy place.
Well, this is good news.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
I'm going to jump in here and remind our listeners that they've got KMUG Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts Steve Dodge and Sunshine Saraceda. And we're real pleased to have Christina Giovanni, based in New York, and you're hearing all about it. And she's the editor of the Emerald Magazine. And you're still doing the magazine, Christina?
Yep, we're still doing it. It's been about 12, almost 13 years. It'll be 13 years this August.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. So wow.
Wow, I know. I can't believe it. I used to get high when I first published it, and I would look at the magazine and be like, whoa, I can't believe I, like, pulled this off. And, you know, so it's definitely been a blessing and an amazing journey, you know, that came out of such a negative situation, you know, and sometimes I reflect on that and just think, like, you know, life is so funny. Life is amazing. And, I'm just taking it all in as it comes along.
Yeah,
well, it really sounds like it's been working out.
For sure.
So yeah. I'd like to drill down on a couple of things. You mentioned this phrase, curate your vibe. And I was quite taken by the phrase. Could you expand on it a little bit?
Sure. I mean, it's all about, you know, the energy that you put out, like the energy you want to receive, you've got to put that out equally. And, and I think, you know, curating the vibe, when I think about, like, my team at each store and who is it that's working there? How are we all working together? You know, it could be anything from, you know, having good music on that everyone is feeling, to, you know, just the conversation, the ambiance, and the customers feel it. You know, they feel that our budtenders really want to help people and work with people and answer their questions because they love weed. You know, we all love weed, and we love talking about weed, and weed makes the vibe really good. So it's all about, you know, generating that good vibe and, you know, keeping the flame alive and keeping the show going and, you know, taking care of each other, whether it's, you know, your family or your team or your staff or your customers, you know, just keeping that momentum going.
For sure. Yeah, it's so important on the floor, too, when you're meeting customers. Definitely got to hold the vibe.
I agree. I know we've been discussing it, Sunshine and I, here for some time, being able to sell pot on the farms themselves. And one of the reasons I thought that would be a really good thing to do is, in fact, the vibe. People would come to your farm. They'd see your happy, smiling face. They get a chance to talk with you. Next thing you know, they want to buy from you. 'Cause I think people, they make that connection, you know. They feel respected, as it seems that your staff does, the involved. It makes a big difference.
For sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. So another phrase you used is, and then somehow, well, give everyone a chance. And somehow that often seems to be missing out here with dispensaries.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not every dispensary, of course, but it kind of seems like the big corps, for various monetary reasons, end up taking all the shelf space. There seems to be impediments to that. But can you expand on that a little bit? Give everyone a chance.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, there is, you've got your corporate cannabis dispensaries and you have your mom and pop dispensaries. And we are definitely mom and pop. And that goes, you know, everything from the way we treat our team to the way we intake inventory and give everyone a shot. And so we are for the little man. And, you know, the Emerald Magazine was started as a platform for the little guy or the little lady like myself that, you know, had their mugshot posterized around town, mm-hmm. didn't have a chance. You know, a lot of my experience going through the media company still resonates this day with the dispensary. I mean, I look forward to, and my business partner, Ray, we both look forward to the mom and pop brands. You know, the guy who's coming from the legacy market over to the legal market, and maybe he's mm-hmm. just winging it
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, and he could have the best flower. You know, he might have the best extract because he's a one-man band or she's a one-man band. And you know, it's highly detailed, highly curated. And you just would never know because maybe, and similar in the marketing and advertising world, there's some great brands out there, but they might not have the budget to have the best packaging. And they might not have the budget to advertise themselves or to hire a videographer to put together some fancy video that gets our attention. So, you know, I mean, I would argue that the smaller brands are the better brands. Always, mm-hmm. because we do have MSOs in the store, and we are aware that there are some individuals, you know, on the race to the bottom, and it's particularly the MSOs, the corporate cannabis, you know, right. and they're the ones that come to us with, you know, $175 ounce to the consumer, which is very hard for these mom and pops to compete with, mm. you know, but in our minds, in our bud tenders' minds, you know, because it's mass produced like that, and typically just, you know, the grade is acceptable. You know, we kind of think of that as maybe like the, I don't know, the economical option. And we try to, you know, we always ask people, like, what's your budget? Do you want, you know, a $10 pre-roll, $5, $20? How are you feeling? You know, and we always do try to recommend the local brands, the smaller mm-hmm. brands. And so I would say to any dispensary owner out there or any, you know, purchasing manager or anyone in the inventory department is, you know, always give it a shot. Always try. You know, I mean, and I get it sometimes that it can be overwhelming, you know, if you don't set hours on when they can come in or if, when vendors, you know, we'd like them to make an appointment just so we can give them the time. And I understand what it's like, you know, to be on the buyer side and maybe be overwhelmed and, you know, maybe just having so many people come in. But my advice to them is, listen, always take it. If they're giving you a sample, take it. You know, don't sure. reject the sample. Maybe you don't have time to have an engaging conversation with them. That's fine. They understand. You know, they put it in your hand. If you like it, you know, reach out to them. Give them a shot because your consumers could love it. But
exactly.
you'll never know if you're just sticking with the most economical option.
Yeah.
Or
totally.
You know, I mean, you're cheating your consumers by just going with maybe the most convenient.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for others, but all I can say is, like, at the Emerald Dispensary, like, we want those mom and pops. We want those small brands. We love that. We mm-hmm. and like, we give everyone a shot. Listen, $1,500. That's the magic number. My team knows $1,500 flies with me. You know, it's not a lot of inventory. You know, the worst thing is having inventory that doesn't move. Maybe the brand, mm-hmm. they don't come out, they don't do a pop-up. You know, there's no marketing around it. They just rely entirely on the retailer to push the product, which can be really hard. Sometimes if it sits mm-hmm. there for too long, it expires. And then, mm-hmm. you know, we're left. Maybe the brand might take it back, give us a credit. Maybe they won't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I can understand from the retailer side, like, the different things you have to think through. But $1,500... you know what? You could do that. You could give it a try. Just give it a try. You don't like it, don't order it again. You give it a try, it didn't sell. Or you give it a try, it sold out the next day. You know, that's just our philosophy.
Yeah, totally. But it also takes, like, you know, it's not so much about what sold yesterday, but it's what can sell tomorrow when you're doing sales. So it's like keeping that mindset of, like, if you have something good, grow the volume. If it's a good – if it's a value product at a good price, like, just get the – you know, grow that volume and keep it moving.
Right. Yeah, and it's, absolutely.
It's good for your business too because, as you mentioned, often the smaller guy, gal, it has a better product. And this, of course, enhances your reputation as a dispensary. You know, where do you go to get good stuff?
I mean,
stuff?
it's just the challenge of – the challenge that never goes away of getting people to pay more for something better. And that's – that challenge is never going to go away. You just got to understand that that's what's happening. So – because it's kind of like wine, right? Like once you try something better, you don't really want to go back to what you had before. So, yeah, it's just that kind of thing of.
Yeah, and I, you know, you mentioned race to the bottom. And that, of course, alarms me. And I believe it's true in other industries as well. When before the microbrews came out with beer, I think there was an advanced state of race to the bottom. Most of the beer available, right, like Bud, for example, why drink it? I can drink water. And that's – I had a, obviously a bad attitude. But then more care and specialization in the craft brewing came about. So that's on one side. But I have another question. Yeah. You had said, well, to your customer, well, what do you want? You want the $5, the $10, or the $20? Do you really do that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we don't want to suggest anything to them that, you know, they're on a budget. And
sure.
We don't want to suggest, like, you know, a super infused pre-roll dripping in hash. Ah,
yeah, totally.
100% THC, but that's like $60 and they exist, you know, and maybe their budget is $20. So, you know, I would say, like, when people approach the register, they either go to the display cases and they look around, or they go straight to the register because they already know what they want, or they have no idea where to even start.
Right.
And they just say, I'm looking for a pre-roll. And we're like, oh, do you want an indica or sativa or a hybrid? Like, we usually start somewhere there. And they're like, oh, I want to go work out after this. I want something like uppity. And they say, okay, what's your budget? And that's usually just on routine. I say that as well. You know, people, they want to try some flat. Maybe they want to try a really nice ace. I mean, an ace. Top tier ace goes for about $60. So after tax is like 13%, like, I don't know, $65 out the door, something like that, 66 maybe. Mm-hmm. And or they want like a $25 ace, you know, or a $30 ace. So we always try to just point them in the right direction of what they're willing to spend.
And do they find that the pricier product is a better product?
Probably not. No.
I mean, what do you mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Does price dictate quality?
No.
Yeah, it probably doesn't, does it?
I don't know. That's a hard one. I mean, listen, I can tell you that I'm not a vape. I don't really vape. I never really picked it up, but there is one vaporizer in New York that, in my opinion, is like out of this world, and it's really expensive. And like when people say, like, I want a vape, and I say, like, is there a certain price range you're trying to stay in? And if they say no, then I usually point them in this direction, you know. And I have one customer, so funny, they were like, oh no, I've tried them, it's such a treat, but it's so expensive. And I was like, I know. So it's like, that's kind of, you know, the one product where I was like, it's really expensive, but it's really, really good quality. So I could testify to that. But, you know, as far as, like, the flower goes, I don't know. I mean, listen, like, they want you to be a repeat customer. They don't want to sell you a $60 eighth and then have it be, you know, full of seeds and stems. So, you know, and I think that consumers have a lot of choice in the market. So not a lot, but they have choice. And so, you know, I mean, if they buy from someone this time and they're not satisfied, they're not going to come back to that brand.
Sure.
So.
Do you have customers requesting certain strains, or what would you say are the really popular strains?
I would say people love the classics, and I don't know when these like became classic. Like, I feel like I turned around and I'm like, no, Blue Dream is still a really hot strain, but now there's like strains out there that like I've never even heard of. You know, it's just like sparkle, sparkle, kush, you know, and it's just like, oh, okay, like, that sounds good, you know, and there's just strains that I've never heard of, and I feel like I'm like, when I turned around and like, you know, like, Granddaddy Purple became an old school strain, like, you know, but it was so relevant, like, when I lived in Humboldt County, you know, and so there are some requests. I'd say, like, in my Manhattan store, we have a lot of requests for PM gummies. So, you know, I mean, it kind of goes by neighborhood, like what it is. In Bushwick and Brooklyn, they definitely want flower. They're smoking tough.
Oh, wow.
In Manhattan, they don't want anyone to know they're smoking. They're smoking vapes, or they're doing edibles, and they're sending their, you know, 30-year-old kids into the store to get it for them, or they're doing delivery.
Okay, so there's still a bit of perceived prejudice.
We're working through it. We're getting through it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. That's very interesting. I also appreciate that the first strain you mentioned was Blue Dream. I almost grew Blue Dream myself. And now I'm looking for genetics, Blue Dream genetics. But it's a really good strain, I think, the Blue Dream. And apparently has improved over the years. Years ago, it had everything going, but you only got your high for 15 minutes.
What, really?
With me anyway. But with time going by, now it's like you said, it's among the classics. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's got a good high.
Yeah, I think so too.
So what are they smoking in Brooklyn for flower?
Let me just open my cabinet and I'll tell you right now, because looks like the sample bin at the store is my cabinet in my house.
Nice.
All right, so Gorilla Glue. So they've got Gorilla Glue.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this is popular. A couple brands do this one. Let's see. We've got Cherry Lime crossed with Super Runts. So, you know, Super Runts, I've heard of that. Cherry Lime, I suppose I've heard of that.
Well, it's just interesting, like the Gorilla Glue, it's not the most tastiest strain, I wouldn't say, but it's the high. People really like the high of that. So there's something, it works for them.
You know, it's so funny. I'll never forget this story. I was dating a guy in Humboldt County, and, like, Gorilla Glue had, like, I don't know, there was a massive wave, like, on the streets of Gorilla Glue, and he smoked it, and he got such bad anxiety. He said he packed up his car and drove to his parents' house in Southern California, or something like that. all on the whim of Gorilla Glue. So every time I see him, like, am I going to get bad anxiety and, like, pack my
stuff
up?
No, it's probably the opposite. Oh, it worked probably the other way. But, hey, we do have a caller.
Well, yeah, let's get the caller in.
Yeah, let's do it. We're getting towards the top of the hour here, so let's bring him in.
Hi, you're in the studio.
Hey, great conversation. I was reluctant to call. Your guest is awesome. I love Brooklyn. So it's interesting to hear you talk about Manhattan versus Brooklyn growing up back there. And it was it's kind of cool because yeah, there's social mechanisms that go on with you talking about a 30-year-old going in to buy for potentially their parents because, oh, we don't want to have people know. But in another part of the conversation I really enjoyed was your history. And me and my partner had a similar history. Unfortunately, I had a cooking show, and it drew attention to me when I got busted for growing weed in Ohio. So it was like, oh, yeah, they put you on the front page, and there's all this stigma and so forth. So it makes it kind of tough to get over it and to come out the other end. And really appreciate your guest tonight for being so real and expressing what it is like to be a dispensary, and it's almost like talking to my guy down at Redwood Liquor. You know, I needed to get a bottle of wine, wanted a bottle from Hush. We had stayed there 30 years ago. It was my wife's birthday, and I find weed to be very similar. You know, and as a past chef, it's that way for me, and I hear that through Sunshine and Steve and your conversations this evening. This past conversation you had about somebody getting anxiety, to have a bud tender or dispensary that can lead you in the right direction and sell you the right wine, sell you the right weed, and it's an art, and I really appreciate that people like you guys are around. And thanks for the show. And that's kind of all I wanted to say.
Right on.
We appreciate you. Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
On.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Christina, we are at the top of the hour. And it's a damn shame because I think we've been having a real good time.
This has been lovely. It's been fun.
It's been really good. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to offer?
Listen, if anyone from Humboldt or anywhere else is listening to this and you guys want to come through, like, to the dispensary, like, please reach out ahead of time. I would love to, you know, host you and, you know, I mean, we could go out for lunch or something. Like, you know, I welcome anyone who wants to come by and, you know, you can visit us on Instagram. We're at The Emerald Dispensary or The Emerald Magazine. And, you know, to everyone in Humboldt who's listening, like, I count down the days to when I can come back for at least a visit and come home for good. So thank you guys so much.
Likewise, when you do come to visit, let me know. I'd love to host you as well.
Yes,
oh,
absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thank you both for having me. I really, really enjoyed this, and I just really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Yeah,
thank
well,
you.
Like I said, we miss you out here, and I'm glad that you're doing so well.
Yeah,
on,
it's really
on
great
the
to
East
hear
Coast.
From you.
That's sure. Very cool.
Great success.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you have been thank listening you. To KMUG Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts, Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarasota. We've been real pleased to have Christina Giovanni with us. We've been talking about all things Brooklyn and New York when it comes to cannabis. And if you came in late, you can go to KMUG.org and listen to the whole show in the archives. Next week, we don't have a guest nailed down, but and I'm got to go down and see a doctor, so I won't be here. But that hardly matters because Sunshine will. And
I might.
She says, oh, yeah, you might be listening to music. You never know. No, not really. But anyway, be sure to tune in, listen in, call in. Good night. Good night, Christina.
Right on. Thank you. Thanks to our callers, too.
This has been a KMUG podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.